This is Corporal Jim Beach reporting to you from San Francisco on the United Nations Conference on International Organizations. This is the 34th in a special series by the Army News Service and the Armed Forces Radio Service. Over the weekend, members of the Big Five delegations discussed the veto power question as interpreted by the Soviet Union and found the Moscow view to be opposed to that held by the United States, Great Britain, China, and France, so far as interpretation of the veto is concerned. USSR Ambassador to Washington, Andrei Gromyko, head of the Soviet delegation, now has reported back to Moscow that the other big powers would not accept his government's rigid interpretation, and now the next move is up to Moscow. The Soviet interpretation of the veto power was that it should extend far beyond the mere question of using armed force, and that it should be effective even in preventing discussion of a conflict or a dispute referred to the World Organization. The United States took the lead in insisting that the veto should not prevent investigation or discussion of any problem that might arise between the nations. Some delegates were of the opinion that this Soviet view might lead to a wide-open fight from the floor in the conference plenary sessions in the closing days of the meetings here. They based this opinion on the assumption that if it is impossible to reconcile the Soviet view with the contentions of the other four big powers, then both interpretations of the breadth of the veto power should have to be submitted to the conference as a whole for open debate. The Big Five have been meeting at least once a day, sometimes more often, in order to wind up the many other matters that must be decided before the charter can be written. Sunday night, the leaders reached agreement on principles on 14 of the 18 problems that have been facing them. Some details of phrasing and language still have to be ironed out, but the charter stands approved in principle at least, except for the one big veto power question. Monday, one of the conference committees gave its approval to the section of the charter dealing with an international police force. Camilo Ponce of Ecuador, who was the chairman of the committee dealing with that issue, said that the group had okayed the entire chapter of the charter, the one having to do with, and we quote, determination of threats to the peace or acts of aggression and action with respect thereto. That's the end of the quote. Under this chapter, the Security Council would serve as the instrument of the New World League in bringing unruly nations into line and preventing the eruption of war in the future. And the Security Council would have the guarantee of an international police force to back up its decisions. That Security Council, made up of 11 members, including the Big Five and six smaller powers, would have these rights. First, the right to determine the existence of, quote, any threat to the peace, breach of the peace, or acts of aggression, close quote. And second, the right to adopt whatever measures are needed to, quote, maintain or restore peace and security, close quote. If the crisis had reached the stage where only armed intervention would solve the problem, then the Security Council could direct such armed intervention to be undertaken. Individual nations would be called upon to supply their share of the Council's military resources. And a military staff committee would determine the strategy to be employed by this world police force. Regional subcommittees would be set up to assist the world military staff. Of course, armed forces would be used only as a last resort. First, the Security Council would call on the nations involved in the crisis to follow certain recommended procedures to keep the situation from reaching the stage of war. And it could propose methods for settling the dispute peacefully. Under the World Charter, all the nations would have pledged themselves to adjust their international differences peacefully. So if the World League was effective, this is as far as any international crisis could get. However, if the nations involved in the dispute refused to do what the Security Council suggested to solve the problem, then that council would have the right to call out the international troops and restore order by force. Senor Ponce told reporters of the committee action on the entire chapter containing these provisions. And he said, I think we have improved it very much. Here is the wording the committee agreed on. It covers regional or group action as well as individual nation responsibility toward the world police and cites specifically that air forces should be held ready at all times to help out. That is to help out. So you can follow me as I read what's here. To help out in the case of need. The chapter says this, in order that all members of the organization should contribute to the maintenance of international peace and security, they should undertake to make available to the Security Council on its call and in accordance with a special agreement or agreements, armed forces, assistance, and facilities, including rights of passage necessary for the purpose of maintaining international peace and security. That means that every nation must be prepared to furnish men and guns to settle a dispute, and must also allow the armies of another nation to move through its territory, if necessary, to reach the scene of action. The chapter further states this: such agreement or agreements should govern the numbers and types of forces, their degree of readiness and general location, and the nature of the facilities and assistance to be provided. Now, that clause pledges the various nations to tell how many men and how many guns and planes they will have ready for action, and where those men and that equipment are located. With that information at hand, the Military Staff Committee could plan the strategy of the campaign to settle by force any dispute that could not be settled peaceably. The use of force in regional grouping is guaranteed by this sentence of the proposed chapter of the Charter. The special agreement or agreements should be negotiated as soon as possible on the initiative of the Security Council and concluded between the Security Council and member states, or between the Security Council and groups of member states. The text continues, all such agreements should be subject to ratification by the signatory states in accordance with their constitutional processes. There's a clause concerning air forces. Here it is. In order to enable urgent military measures to be taken by the organization, there should be held immediately available by the members of the organization national air force contingents for combined international enforcement action. The strength and degree of readiness of these contingents and plans for their combined action should be determined by the Security Council, with the assistance of the Military Staff Committee, within the limits laid down in the special agreement or agreements referred to above. The Australians and the French asked that the wording be altered to specifically state that mixed as well as Air Force contingents should be held available for urgent use. But the other delegates pointed out that the language of the chapter already covered that situation adequately. Well, there is the section dealing with an international police force. It guarantees that the Security Council, when it recommends a means of settling a dispute, has the power to back it up with force. But here again, the veto problem comes in as the major question. If one of the big five members of the Security Council votes against the use of force, then the Council cannot call on its world police. The Big Five delegates here at San Francisco has emphasized that there is more agreement than disagreement among them as far as the veto power goes. The differences exist in the interpretation of how far the veto should extend. The Soviet Union wants the veto to cover everything except such matters as calling meetings. The other four big powers think that all situations threatening peace should be aired in council, even if nothing actually is done to alleviate the crisis. The smaller nations oppose both interpretations. They would prefer to have an arrangement whereby the Security Council could act on a simple majority agreement, even if two of the Big Five vetoed action. But the Big Five rejected this proposal, saying that unless it is fixed that the Big Five must agree unanimously, then there would be danger of one Big Five, of any one of the Big Five disagreeing, and thereby a situation arising whereby the Big Five were disagreeing among themselves. And they felt that the bigger powers, as we might call them, the biggest powers, probably, because the Big Five are the Big Five nations of the world, and they felt, to repeat myself, that the biggest powers must stick together on all issues in order to keep the organization an effective piece of machinery to preserve peace. Unless some concession is made to the small nations on this matter, there is a very real possibility when it comes time to ratify the Charter, the small nations may do so with reservations. Monday, the head of the Cuban delegation, Dr. Guillermo Belt, said that he was conferring with other leaders of the small nations and that he expected them to stick together on this question. He said Cuba and some of the others might sign the World Charter with reservations if the veto issue was not solved to their satisfaction. Belt saw a possibility that the controversy might be fought out on the floor of an open session of the entire conference. It is understood that the New World Organization will be responsible for keeping the peace once the charter is ratified by the various governments. But with regard to who is going to keep the peace until then, nothing has been definitely decided upon. It is understood that the conference secretariat has drawn up a paper calling for an interim commission with headquarters in Washington or London to carry on the work of keeping order until the charter is ratified. It is said that this commission would meet the 15th of September. Apparently, there are only a few problems left to be worked out aside from the veto. One of these is the business of trusteeships. A conference committee already has approved a general statement of policy looking toward the development of self-government for dependent peoples and toward self-government or independence for peoples under international rule. The Soviet Union and China are fighting for the extension of ultimate independence for all peoples, regardless of whether they are under trusteeship of one big power or under the rule of several powers. But America and Britain were opposed to that stand. The Philippine delegation has pledged itself to fight for assurance of independence for all peoples. Brigadier General Carlos Romulo said last week that he would carry the fight through to the closing session of the conference if necessary. He said that the Philippine independence already was guaranteed, but that Filipinos were interested in all other peoples having full independence eventually. The Big Five are trying to reach unanimity on these matters. Whether they must agree on the nomination of the principal executive officer of the World Organization, what provision should be made for amending the charter and calling conventions to revise it, and what part the big nation should take in the election of justices to the new International Court of Justice. France made a proposal some time ago that all nations should be free and have free and equal access to raw materials. But some nations said that this was too broad. So the French are now recommending that the United Nations undertake to provide equality for the distribution of raw materials and the means of production. Australia has suggested that one certain clause, as written, permits the World Organization to interfere with the domestic affairs of a nation. The chapter actually says that the World League cannot interfere with internal policies, but adds that the League can step in if an internal controversy threatens world peace. The Australians say that sort of language might supply a knothole through which the World Organization can poke a finger into the nation's private business, that is, one or any nation, of course. You might like to hear what some of the newspapers around the world think of what's going on here at San Francisco. Here are a couple of editorial statements printed recently. The London issue of the Daily Worker, a communist paper, said this: summing up, it seems possible today to say, so far as the machinery is concerned, San Francisco has produced, bar accidents, machinery which is better than the old league. We are still inching along. Whether that machinery is going to work instead of rust depends obviously on the vigilant, organized activity of the peoples of the nations concerned. The Daily Herald, a London organ, labor organ, that is, published in London, of course, said this: San Francisco is rushing through its business with most of the delegates glancing over their shoulders at the lengthening shadows cast from their home countries. It would be utterly unfair, of course, to infer that the major obstacles have come from Britain. It is fair to state that the chance of real British leadership was fortified. The El Panama America, an independent liberal paper published in Panama City, said this: what must spring from the conference is security against military aggression, development of specific means to settle controversies peacefully, expansion of the rights of man, unity of purpose and endeavor to promote equal reciprocal opportunities. And that winds up the 34th special report on the United Nations Conference on International Organization, which has come to you direct from San Francisco. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.